You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program, the nation's legal correspondent, Ellie Mistal, on SCOTUS rulings handed down today, yesterday. Over the past couple of days. Also on the program, Trump was given written reports of supposed Russian-Afghan bounties months ago. And not so great a news out of Kentucky. The results are in. It appears that Charles Booker has lost to Amy McGrath. Close, but no cigar. Meanwhile, Don Lights on Marblehead. Susan Collins had no idea Brett Kavanaugh was anti-choice. No idea. We are weeks away from millions expecting eviction notices. And Elizabeth Warren intros a nationwide eviction moratorium bill in the Senate. Meanwhile, New York City may pause its reopening as big budgets agreed to in the wake of coronavirus shortfalls. Speaking of which, the government developed a coronavirus treatment now in private hands, and because so, it's going to cost a fortune. Jacksonville now requiring masks as the RNC approaches. China asserts new security powers over Hong Kong, and YouTube bans hate speech. Hate speechers, I guess, Richard Spencer, Stefan Molyneux, and David Duke. And, of course, Trump's purely accidental, totally benign white power tweet, which couldn't be reversed for hours or deleted. Because. Lastly, rest in peace, Carl Reiner, age 98. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. I'm feeling a little tired today. We are a couple of days away from our vacation. I need it bad. I'm not going to lie to you. I just forgot that I had to do the AM quickie this morning. So we were out a little bit late for that. Apologies. Thanks for joining us today. Rest in peace, Carl Reiner. Gotta say, comedic heroes. He was not necessarily one of them. Although I will say he directed some movies that I absolutely loved as a kid. To the extent that I have a comedic sensibility, which I think, you know, many would argue is arguable. Things like those Steve Martin movies, Man with Two Brains, Jerk, All of Me, big part of it. And The 2,000-Year-Old Man, inspiration for some of the work that John Benjamin and I did back in the day. Used to listen to some of that stuff. And I appreciated how much he liked to crap on Donald Trump up until the day he died, apparently. So, rest in peace, Carl Reiner. A lot of our comedy, he did a lot of the Sid Caesar stuff. I don't think he was on the Laugh-In, but he did a lot of the Sid Caesar stuff, I think. And a lot of the comedy that we have today in some way, you know, he was... you can find a lot of the genetic strain was from Reiner. And of course, the Dick Van Dyke Show, which I watched a ton of as a kid. So rest in peace. And moving on, 98, we should all be so lucky as far as I'm concerned. At this point, who knows? Who knows what's going on? The coronavirus, of course, exploding across the country. And does not appear to be any real attempts to deal with this. You know, you've got, you know, Texas is now starting to say we need to wear masks. We're going to shut down the bars and this and that. A little bit late. We will know really, you know, what we're looking at now are people who got infected 2 to 3, 4 weeks ago in terms of the data. So, you know, do the math. You can just look at the rate of progress. And the real question in terms of like deaths, which is not to undersell, you know, how debilitating this disease is, even if you don't die from it. The real question in terms of deaths will be two-part. One is, will it cross over into an older age cohort? Right now, the average age of these outbreaks seem to be in the mid-30s. Will it cross over? Will, if that number gets 10 years older, that the average age is like in the mid-40s, we're going to have a problem with fatalities. And we're also going to have a problem with fatalities if these hospitals are just not capable of dealing with the number of patients they're getting. And we will see. It does not, you know, contact tracing, all that, or it just seems to be out the window. Out the window. And in some places, there is a sense that you should wear a mask. In other places, it's just like, whatever. I don't know. We have... And on top of that, and this is going to be the story, you know, a month from now, we're going to be talking about a lot more. 3 or 4 weeks from now, we're going to talk a lot more. We have a tremendous number of people who are going to be evicted or receive evicted notices come the end of July when the first round of CARES Act, the moratorium and the sort of the patchwork of moratoriums ends. Warren introduced a bill in the Senate or has unveiled one. That would just be a moratorium for a year. Still owe the money. So a lot of people, what happened is they'll get evicted and they'll have this on their record because they're not going to be able to pay it back. I mean, how do you pay it back after a year? But at the very least, we'd have the moratorium in place until the end of this, theoretically. What we really should be doing is figure out ways to make, at the very least, small renters whole on behalf of rentors whole on the behalf of the rentees and some mortgage assistance. I mean, we're going to need more aid. And we're starting to see now these massive cuts in budgets in cities and states that are going to impact all sorts of social services across the board, including education. So this is going to be a mess, folks. It's going to be a real mess, and it's going to get worse. I guess I'm not in a great mood today. But there's this. Now, I'm of different minds about this because I got to say that I think, like, the proper way, I don't know if it's true that Russia was paying bounties to Afghani militants to encourage them to disrupt the peace process with the Taliban. By attacking us, right? I mean, that's the oldest game in the book. Trying to do a peace process, one side instigates something or a third party instigates something to screw up the process. Now, in an alternate universe where we didn't have Donald Trump as the president, assuming this is correct, he would have gotten notified of this in February. Maybe in February or March, he would have said, we're getting reports that Russia is interfering. I have sent word to them. They should stop doing this. It will not preclude us. We are resolute in our decisions as to our disposition in Afghanistan. And none of this child's play by Russia will make any difference. Now, of course, we don't have that president. We're not in an alternate universe. And so it turns into a crap show where he doesn't pay any attention to it or ignores it, or we don't know. But here is Ainsley Earhart explaining to us, Steve Doocy explaining to us, maybe he just didn't know about it.
Well, I mean, Michael Waltz also went on to say that we've known for years that Russia has supported the Taliban through arms. The Iranians have supported the Taliban with cash and equipment and training. Some of their soldiers were found with weapons that were from Iran. So have the Pakistanis. So this is not anything new. The point here is, if it's not verified by our 16 intelligence agencies, that's their job. That's what they do. It doesn't get to the president's desk. The president, he has to make decisions based on intel that is in front of him. And if he's not briefed on it, then he doesn't know about it. Right. But if he is briefed on it, then he can act on it. Well, so that's the danger here, Steve, that if it's not true and the president acts, then that causes a lot of trouble.
Well,
so according we want to be safe here.
According to the New York Times, it was in his presidential daily briefing on February 27th.
But he doesn't. All presidents don't read all of their briefings.
Right. A guy comes in and essentially tells the president what is in it. And so it might have been printed and it doesn't mean he actually heard about it, because you've got to figure, if the president had heard that that was going on, he would have done something about it. All right.
Right. You got to figure that. It's not like Donald Trump would be sloughing off. Yeah, you got to figure that. You know, look, presidents don't all read their briefings. That's just the way it goes, folks. You know, he may miss things. Sometimes they read it to him and he's dozing off. This episode brought to you by Magic Spoon. As you know, breakfast cereal. Probably one of the best parts of growing up as a kid. You get the cereal. It's sweet. It's delicious. Bunch of different flavors. Little characters on the box. But as an adult, you realize you don't want to eat all that sugar. You don't want to drink that milk that's been doused in sugar. Magic Spoon is a new cereal company. It's discovered the way to recreate your favorite childhood cereals with zero sugar. They got 12 grams of protein, 3 grams of net grams of carbs in each serving. Magic Spoon offers 4 flavors based on the all-time classics, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry, plus a variety pack that lets you try them all. They've recreated the taste and the texture of those classic sugary cereals, but it tastes so incredible, you will not know that it's healthy. It's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, it's soy-free, it's low-carb, and it's GMO-free. Look, I'll be honest with you. I try to eat eggs and stuff like that more breakfast than not, but now twice a day I'm eating this Magic Spoon because my kids eat it every day. Saul loves it. And every day he's like, I can't believe there's no sugar in this. It's monk fruit. I don't know how they do it, but it's delicious. For me, I'm a cocoa guy. Saul, fruity. Till we run out of the fruity, then he moves to frosted, then to blueberry, then around to cocoa. I don't understand it. For me, it's like chocolate. This stuff is delicious. Honestly, we eat it every day in this house. Go to magicspoon.com/majority report. Grab a variety pack. Try it today. Use the promo code majority report at checkout. You get free shipping. Magic Spoon, so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund you. No questions asked. Magicspoon.com/majority report. Code majority report for free shipping. Check it out, folks. It is Saul approved. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ellie Mistal. We'll be talking about the Supreme Court hearings that we've been hearing about. Or rulings, I should say. We are back, Sam Cedar, on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Eli Mistal. He is the justice correspondent for The Nation magazine. Eli, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I just watching the country melt down, and hoping that we just, melt into a pool that can recoagulate, with any luck in the future. But
while the country wonders if Donald Trump can read his briefings, I'm over here reading the briefings coming out of First Street with the Supreme Court, and it has been a fascinating couple of weeks over there.
You know, I'll tell you something. The other day, my sister was listening to NPR or something, which I've asked her not to do, but she heard Michael Steele claim that he thinks conservatives are going to be surprised by John Roberts when it comes to the abortion case and to maybe the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And these are the two big cases that came out yesterday. I don't even know what day it is. Okay. I guess it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's one day, but yesterday.
Yes. And we also had a ruling today on Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue. Maybe we have a chance to talk about that in a moment, but the two big ones so far this week are the case about abortion, June Medical, and this one is you characterized it. You said just a reminder: John Roberts is not your friend. Explain to us why John Roberts is not our friend, and maybe we should just start with what are trap laws.
Yeah, so let's understand what's happening here in this abortion case. A trap law is a kind of conservative invention. They've realized that making a frontal attack on abortion rights, making a frontal attack on Roe v. Wade, is both difficult and unnecessary. Why try to outlaw the right to an abortion when you can simply make it impossible for anybody to get an abortion because you've outlawed all the abortion services providers? And these are what trap laws do. They kind of go after not the woman who wants to exercise her bodily autonomy, but the doctor who provides the service, right? So the law in Louisiana at issue in June Medical was this issue of whether or not an abortion services provider had to have admitting privileges in nearby hospitals. And when you make that the requirement, what you end up doing in a lot of these states is essentially making it impossible for people to provide abortion services. That was the law at issue in the case that was decided yesterday. The thing is that Texas had almost an identical law, that was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2016. That case was called Whole Woman's Health. So what the case really was about yesterday was whether or not this law that the court struck down in 2016 suddenly was okay. The only reasons conservatives thought that the law might be the law that wasn't okay in 2016 would be okay in 2020 is because, well, what's happened between 2016 and 2020? Neil Gorsuch replaced Merrick Garland, who was supposed to replace Antonin Scalia, and Brett Kavanaugh replaced Anthony Kennedy. Though that's the only change. Conservatives thought they had finally enough votes at the Supreme Court to overturn recent Supreme Court precedent, and Roberts basically just said no, right? And this is, when you look at this from 30,000 feet, John Roberts did not say he supports a woman's right to choose. He did not change his opinion about the legality of the trap law. Roberts was in dissent in 2016 against with the Texas trap law. He hasn't changed his mind. He simply said, look, y'all, the laws are the same. We just ruled on this. And Roberts was willing to follow precedent from his own court about whether or not the law was constitutional. That's all that happened.
And we should say, so the people know, a trap law is a targeted restriction on abortion providers. And my understanding, too, from like reading contemporaneous accounts of the oral arguments, that Roberts started out a more enthusiastic and then was just like, ugh, this is the exact same case. And my understanding is that, A, it was argued poorly, too. There was no, you know, theory as to why this precedent should be overturned 3 years later. And I also, my understanding is also that the only reason why they took this case was because an appellate court had ruled in such a way that was, you know, created a conflict between what the Supreme Court had said in Whole Health and now. And so there was sort of an obligation to deal with it. But we should also, and maybe you should also explain this dynamic. These cases, I mean, sort of a, you know, like a, they're lagging indicators on some level, right? Like the decision to make this case, to bring this case was several years ago. And so they're not necessarily, they may not have even been aware of like what Whole Health would have been ruled at that point, or has this been after the fact and they're just trying to go at it again because they know the court makeup was different?
Yeah, I think in this particular situation, and you're right to say generally cases are lagging indicators, but not this one. This one was directed because they put Kavanaugh on the court. Without getting too much into the weeds of the procedural history here, what happened was that Whole Woman's Health says that the Texas law is unconstitutional. Okay. Then the Fifth Circuit, which controls Texas, Louisiana, a couple other southern states, is one of the most conservative lower courts in the nation, gets this Louisiana law that's substantially similar to the Texas law, right? At that point, what that lower court should have done was to reject the Louisiana law. But that case came in front of the lower circuit just as just as Kennedy announced his retirement, just as Brett Kavanaugh was being nominated and eventually confirmed to the Supreme Court. And so what the lower court did, what the Fifth Circuit did, was basically ignore recent Supreme Court precedent and say, oh, the Louisiana law is fine. And I believe that they did that only because they knew Kavanaugh was about to be on the court, providing them what they had hoped would be a fifth conservative justice to overturn this ruling. The conservatives, and this is part of what I tried to explain in The Nation today in my piece about John Roberts. If you step back to 30,000 feet, people need to understand just how ridiculous the conservative legal theories are at this point in our history. They are wackadoodle, off-the-wall legal theories. When you say that Roberts kind of got exasperated during the oral arguments of this case and kind of threw up his hands, it's because he kept asking, like, is there any legitimate reason why the Louisiana law is different than the Texas law? And the lawyers had nothing. They weren't even trying to argue that the laws were different. They were just trying to, like, nod, wink, hey, don't we know that we got the five conservatives now? Isn't it going to be good? Like, that was their actual argument, right? That's why Roberts has seemed in recent weeks to be more moderate, right? It's not that he's becoming a liberal. It's not that he's becoming more moderate. It's that conservative arguments are so off the walls, crazy pants that Roberts like, I can't do this, y'all.
Well, it's not just, but I mean, it's not just that Roberts is, you know, it's his personal pride as an attorney. Roberts has to be aware that there's a growing movement. Like, people are already talking about getting rid of the filibuster in the legislature, in the Senate. And, you know, we're hearing this from Democratic senators. We're hearing this from Democratic candidates running for Senate. So there appears to be a strong will to do that. And there has been a greater conversation about court packing in this past, you know, a year or two, particularly following the wake of Garland, that Roberts has to be aware that he can't give fuel to this movement to reform the Supreme Court justices, right? I mean, he's got to be, this isn't just about him looking at himself in the mirror. It's about him maintaining his power on the court.
Roberts seems to me to be the only conservative who remembers that Donald Trump is not going to be president forever, right? Like, he seems to be the only one that has this idea that, like, guys, we're going to be here for, like, 20 years. Trump is going to be gone soon, if not literally like in a couple of months, then even if it takes another 4 years, Trump is going to be gone, but the court will still be here. And what kind of court do we want? What Roberts wants is a court that is able to do the work of defending the Republican agenda without these kind of attacks that are increasingly coming from the left and from liberals. You know, I've written a 3,000 word piece on how we need to pack the court, right? There is much more kind of liberal interest in court packing now than there ever has been before. I mean, you'd have to literally go all the way back to FDR to get this kind of progressive interest in the issue. And I think you're absolutely right to say that Roberts notices that and wants to make sure that the court is seen as a legitimate body and not simply an enforcement wing of the Republican Party. That doesn't mean that Roberts is a moderate. It doesn't mean that he's not Republican. Roberts wants to, and I've said this before, Sam, but like Roberts' goal is to bend the law towards the Republican agenda as much as possible without breaking it. That he cares about breaking it makes him different from Brett Kavanaugh, for instance.
Right. Or he's also he's just in a different position because it reflects a lot on him as well. But yes, he's got that agenda. And I will also add this. Let me just also just refine your point. The thing that I've noticed, you know, having like spoken to, you know, because the 2000 election for me was just was monumental. And I have been tracking lawyers on this for 20 years. And, you know, I have never seen, it's not just the left or liberals or whatnot. It is lawyers. It's the legal profession is at its peak. It seems to me, certainly in my adult lifetime, in awareness that in terms of cynicism and skepticism towards the Supreme Court and seeing it at less as the legal institution that lawyers are raised to believe that it is, and are seeing it more as a like you say, a wing of the Republican Party. And I think that Roberts has to be aware of that, that like he's just you know, looking at this and going like, we're leaving too big a target here. If we reverse a ruling that we did 3-4 years ago, I mean, that's nuts.
You can draw a straight line from Bush v. Gore in 2000 to the Merrick Garland confirmation fiasco to the appointment of the confirmation of an alleged attempted rapist to the Muslim ban. And I think that that linear progression is what has, at least in my, and I agree with you, Sam, at least from where I sit, has changed even how other lawyers, other institutionalists talk and understand about the Supreme Court. After Bush v. Gore, there were still a lot of people who would argue that the court was not a politicized institution, this was a random case, blah, 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 right? But after everything that's happened since Bush v. Gore, and especially after what we saw with Mitch McConnell blocking Merrick Garland, the argument that the court is an apolitical institution simply is facially ridiculous now, right? And nobody with credibility can make that case now, even within the legal profession. And so that has, I think, really changed. That started to change how lawyers talk about the court. And it's also, from where I sit, started to change how the media talks about the court. And that's almost as important as how the lawyers talk about it, right?
Right.
I mean, more important than how the lawyers talk about it, right? Because the media is how, you know, most people are not like me and sitting down and reading, you know, 90-page Supreme Court decisions. They're getting their court news from, you know, talking heads, you know, analyzing and interpreting the decisions for them. And what we've seen, especially in the past 3-4 years, is even people in the media start to cover the courts more like they cover Congress or they cover the president, understanding the court is a political branch of government just like the other two. As that starts to happen, the I just call balls and strikes-ness that Roberts wants to cling to becomes more and more facially ridiculous.
I am going to use that term. I call balls and strike-ness. I like that. And we should just one other thing to add on this specific case that he basically says, I mean, he lays out essentially, and he's done this in other cases, it appears to me. He lays out the roadmap to and basically puts out the clarion call. We want a case that will take Casey, you know, follow the Casey route in terms of dealing with abortion. Right.
Yeah, it's he's this case was not a protection of abortion rights so much as it was a warning for how abortion rights can be taken away in the future. When Roberts mentions Planned Parenthood v. Casey, people need to understand Planned Parenthood v. Casey is the controlling abortion decision in this country. It's not Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade got mollified into Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And Planned Parenthood v. Casey sets out basically a complicated, convoluted set of tests that basically tell us when the government is allowed to restrict the abortion, right? Roberts is saying, let's look at that case again. Let somebody bring me a case that looks to overturn Casey and we can get this thing done, is what he's saying in that opinion. And it's worth noting, I personally believe that what the conservatives are waiting for, the kind of conservative legal bar is waiting for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to pass away. They want to replace her with a woman, either Amy Coney Barrett or, God forbid, Naomi Rao, and then have that conservative woman write the decision overturning abortion. Like, that's their plan, and that plan will succeed if Trump wins re-election. Like, that is their plan. That's what's going to happen. And November 3rd is the last best hope to stop that from happening.
Right. Well, Roberts wants to be the sixth vote on this, on the overturning of that right of abortion.
Exactly.
Okay. So
they don't want to do it 5-4, and they don't want to do it 5-4, five men against the three women who are on the court.
Right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, hang in there. Breyer, hang in there. Everybody, hang in there. A couple more months. You get one more bite at the apple. All right. Let's move to the other big one yesterday, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It was a challenge to the provision that the president, that the director of the CFPB could only be fired for cause, did not serve at the whim of the president, as it were. The argument was that's unconstitutional and the whole agency needs to go down the toilet. But that didn't happen.
Yeah, Robert split the baby here. And to be clear, I hate this decision. I think it's mainline constitutional to write a law that protects the agency director from the whim of the president. We have that in lots of other situations, right? We have it for the FBI. We have it for the Federal Reserve. Like, every person who works in the government should not be fireable by the president when he goes on a Twitter rant. Like, that would be better. But Roberts ruled, along with the conservatives, that the way the CFPB was written to make its director, again, unfireable but for cause, was an unconstitutional violation of the separation of powers and the appointments clause of the presidency, which basically means that Trump can and does fire whoever he wants, whenever he wants, for whatever reason he wants, right? That decision that kind of guts the CFPB also is what Trump is going to use to now put pressure on Fed Chair Jerome Powell. It is a one-to-one connection in terms of if Trump can do this to the CFPB, that means he can also fire Jerome Powell, which means that he can politically pressure Jerome Powell into making monetary decisions that Trump likes. It means that he could fire FBI Director Chris Wray, just like he fired FBI Director James Comey. Like, this has a really negative effect on anybody's ability who works in government to exist in government without taking Donald Trump's loyalty pledge. On the other hand, the conservatives, again, going for the most wackadoodle, off-the-wall theory they could, didn't just want to say that firing the director was unconstitutional. They wanted to say that because firing director, making the director unfireable, I mean, was unconstitutional, that the entire agency was unconstitutional, which, again, is just crazy talk. It just it makes no sense. And Roberts did not go along with that. He said, no, the issue with the director is what's legally called severable. That means it can be distinguished from problems with the organization in general, which means they can kind of correct the director issue without scuttling the entire agency, which is a mainline obvious decision that for some reason conservatives are angry about because they're crazy now.
Well, I mean, had the court found that the independence of the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is essential to the creation of this agency, it would impart enough, it seems to me it would impart enough importance to the agency in and of itself that would then make it absolutely necessary for it to be independent, right? Like, it was sort of like, it's circular. If you're saying that the whole agency is dependent upon the independence of this agency, you're basically saying, and then strike that down as unconstitutional, you're basically saying, like, Congress has no authority to create anything, it seems to me.
Exactly. Which is why their theory was a bit off, which is why the conservative theory was off the wall, right? And again, I think Roberts got it wrong here. I think the conservatives are wrong. I think that it is in keeping with constitutional principles for Congress to create an agency under the executive branch, appointed by the executive branch, that can't be fired by the executive branch every time Trump, doesn't like somebody's Twitter feed.
So what does this do to things like terms for the National Labor Relations Board?
Exactly. I mean, it scuttles those, right? There are so many, and the way they'll get around and a lot the Labor Relations Board is that Roberts did try to be cute, where he said because it was a single director as opposed to a panel of directors, that's why it was a separation of powers issue, leaving open the possibility that if you have a panel of directors, you can protect them from being fired, except for cause. Like, it's a little bit kind of like too cute by half, I think. The import here is that this decision gives Donald Trump and truly any future president kind of unmitigated firing powers for people in the executive branch, which I think Donald Trump proves that's how dangerous that is. That means that the president can kind of force everybody who works in government to swear loyalty to the president if they want their job, which is not good government. And why I think the conservatives are wrong, but they get to be on the Supreme Court and I'm here talking to you.
I just don't understand, like, it's a bizarre, how is there a legal principle that one person can't serve, you know, it can't be fired for cause, but if you have multiple people, they're protected. Like, I mean, how is that a constitutional principle?
He made it up, Sam. He made it up. it's what they do sometimes. he made up a different. He interpreted separation of powers in such a way as to make up a distinction between a single head versus a board of directors.
All right.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Listen. So we got 2 minutes. I know you got a hard out here. Let me ask you this: as someone who has called for court packing, okay, and as someone who obviously you spend I don't know how much time, but I would imagine a certain amount of time talking to folks in the legal community, because I'm convinced that we're hearing more of that in the media because it's softened. That prospect is like, that perspective has changed in the legal community. Is this going to be effective? Is this ruling, is the Gorsuch ruling the other day, is this going to be effective in sort of like letting the air out of that reform the court tire?
I think so, and I think really they won this battle when Biden became the nominee. Biden, of all the Democrats running, Biden was the least amenable to court packing. Of all the Democrats running, I think Biden was one of the least kind of aware of the Supreme Court, which is odd, given that Biden used to be the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But he was, I think, of all the possible Democratic nominees, Biden was kind of the worst on this on this issue. He believes in a version of the Supreme Court that has not existed since, certainly since Bush v. Gore, and probably hasn't legitimately existed since sometime in the 70s, right? If you ask Biden what he thinks of a nominee, he thinks that we should nominate good justices. I don't really know what that means, but he thinks they should be good. Great, Joe. He's the only one who has seriously resurfaced the idea of renominating Merrick Garland, which would be a huge mistake. He's not the guy to push for, especially when you realize that to get court packing, you need such a massive kind of popular support. He's not the standard bearer. He's not the leader of that movement. He's never going to be the leader of that movement. And so I think that Roberts won that battle with Biden. That said, just because I need to say this, because people sometimes misinterpret my ugh about Biden. A Biden judge is 1,011 billion times better than a Trump judge. There is no comparison, okay? There is no comparison to the kind of, even if Biden were to renominate Merrick Garland, there is no comparison between the kind of justice Merrick Garland would be versus the kind of justice Naomi Rao would be, which is who Trump might nominate if he gets reelected, right? Like, you can't, I say this to people who are disappointed with Biden all the time. There is not a thing that you want if you are left of center that can survive the Supreme Court being 7-2 conservatives, right? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 87 years old. Stephen Breyer is 81 years old. If Trump wins again, Trump could get two more Supreme Court appointments. Nothing survives. Not gun rights, not climate change. Nothing survives a 7-2 court. So Biden winning and nominating his centrist milquetoast justices would be loads better than Trump winning and appointing another couple of hardcore arch conservative justices.
We are simpatico on that point, Ellie. I think my audience knows that. Ellie Mistal, thank you so much for your time today. Justice correspondent at The Nation magazine. Always a pleasure. Really appreciate you making the time today.
Thank you, Sam. Have a nice one.
You too. All right, folks. There you have it. We got a couple more rulings that are coming. I guess it's going to go into July. I mean, there could be more today. There was actually a ruling today, which we did not get to. The Espinoza, I think it was, ruling, which... basically held that the application of Montana's Constitution no aid provision to a state program providing tuition assistance to parents who send their children to private schools discriminated against religious schools. So this is basically a Betsy DeVos wet dream. The idea is she likes, you'll recall that Betsy DeVos said years ago in an interview, and maybe it was her husband, but they were being interviewed together. They don't have a problem with public education. They have a problem with public schools. So what they want is they want the government to collect the money in taxation, and then they want to be able to distribute it to parochial schools. And so this is a basically means that a state program that provides tuition assistance to parents who send their kid to private schools can do so on they can get aid from the state to do so. And I guess there was another case, U.S. Patent Trademark Office versus Booking.com. The justice held that a term styled generic.com is a generic name for a class of goods and thus ineligible for federal trademark protection only if the term that has that meaning to consumers. So I guess maybe Booking.com is not trademarkable. I'm not sure. I'm not as worried about that. Folks, that is our fun half, excuse me, our free half for the day. Just a reminder, you can support this show by doing a myriad of things, but the pantheon of support of the show, becoming a member, is the highest of the high. And when you become a member, you get extra content every day. You also get the ability to walk around saying, like, I'm a member of the Majority Report. What's wrong with you? You can do so at jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, you get the show commercial free. Still, if you look in the show description, you'll still see the deals that we have for, like, Magic Cereal today, which, like I say, I really enjoy the cereal. My kids love it. I just try not to eat that much cereal because in the morning I'm trying. I need to like for me, like I cannot have, I have, everything has to be completely habitual or I just get overwhelmed. Maybe that's, maybe I'm revealing too much of a personality defect or maybe even like a clinical condition I have, but that's just the case. But my kids love it. I eat it maybe twice a week, but anyways, that's not the point. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, I wanted to use this with Ellie, but
I'm losing it, bro.
That's that is the sound drop that launched the merch, the I'm Losing It, Bro Majority Report t-shirt, all the proceeds of which go to skidrow.org. It is a Skid Row Trust. It is organization that supports literally thousands of unhoused folks in LA, and John Benjamin and I put this together. I came up with the it, and he wrote the I'm losing bro part, and we were like workshopping, like I'm losing my keys. No, it, we just went, we settled on it. So the t-shirt says I'm losing it, bro. And you can check it out. The creative process when we were coming up for that was just, I wish you were in the room, honestly. But check it out. We got a lot of other merch at shop.majorityreportradio.com. Of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. If it wasn't for Just Coffee, I would be flat on the desk right now. I'd be dropping out of frame. Drinking probably more coffee than I should, but I'm enjoying it. So. And don't forget AM Quickie. You can sign up for it at amquickie.com. Tonight is Tuesday night. And on TMBS, protecting the post office. We still, that's still extant. I mean, supposedly, I think they're holding it hostage, frankly, to leverage it, make it like, oh, this is a Democratic get. We're allowing you to get the, in the next round of coronavirus relief, which has to come, I think, folks, has to. I mean, I don't know. These people are lunatics. But so on TMBS tonight, protecting the post office, Bill Fletcher Jr. will be on with the five steps for the labor movement. And you have a post game reflecting on Chris Haney, who responds to the Sam Harris disaster on BLM. Joshua Kahn Russell, the organizer on the Pentagon War Games and the right wing populist drama that is happening. Check that out tonight. YouTube.com, The Michael Brooks Show, Patreon.com, TMBS. Also, where's Nomi? Do we have her?
She's not in the waiting room yet.
She
no.
said she would be here a few minutes ago.
So. I can't hear you, Brendan. You're so low.
Oh, am I still?
Yeah. What are you doing?
Also on TMBS, because Michael's got his Castro beard, we'll be talking about Fidel Castro in Harlem in 1965.
Why are you sound? You sound low to me too. What are you guys
really? Doing? That might just be you, Sam.
That's
that might be your mic, yeah.
My mic?
No, your
or your headphones.
Input, yeah.
Oh, I think that's what it is. Yeah, it is. There we go.
How's that?
Oh, that's much better. Sometimes I turn down the music as I'm going in to get the guest, and then I forget to do it. I get so many different controls on this thing. I'm completely overwhelmed. Completely overwhelmed.
Nobody said she'd be on a few minutes ago, but she must be having some sort of technical issue.
All right. Well, we will talk more about Nomi's show, but check it out. Just it's always great. So it really doesn't matter what she has on. It's a consistently a great show. The Nomi Key Show, patreon.com, The Nomi Key Show, and of course on youtube.com, The Nomi Key Show / The Nomi Key Show. Don't forget the Antifada. Jamie had a whole array of things. And also on her Vampire Castle show, she's talking about vampires, actual vampires, to the extent that they exist.
Well, cinema vampires.
A cinema cinema vampires.
Yeah.
Not, she doesn't ever like talk about them in the wild or whatever it is.
They might do some of that, but I think it's mostly about pop culture vampires.
All right. Well, Matt, why don't you tell me what's happening on Literary Hangover?
Yeah, last night I hit the high seas of the North Atlantic in Assassin's Creed Rogue, and we learned about Hydrarchy, which is the labor power of the sailors in the North Atlantic, and how it was very multiracial, very from all over the world, and pretty revolutionary, too. So that was from Peter Linebaugh and Marcus Rediker's The Many-Headed Hydra. And also, there will be a new episode, a couple new episodes coming up soon, but I don't want to say more than that.
There was sailor labor power?
Yeah, of course. I mean, think of all the, for instance, you didn't want too many sailors aboard your ship that knew how to navigate, because that becomes a mutiny problem,
right?
And those sorts of things.
Right. I was going to say, it seems to me they lose all their leverage when they get to shore.
Well, you might not have to go back to shore. You just keep on the high seas. Raise the black flag.
Well, then what are you going to do? I mean, like, what are you going to do with your wages at that point? How do you get off the boat?
Oh, wages aren't as important to you once you're a pirate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't follow any of that. All right, folks.
Oh, Nomi just arrived. Should we?
She did? Okay.
Yeah,
well, let's get Nomi in. Nomi will tell us about what she's got on her show this week, and then we will head to the fun half. Nomi. Here she comes.
Wait.
I can hear you.
Wait.
All right. Well, just tell us what's on your show this week.
What's on the show this week? We have Representative Chris Rabb from Pennsylvania, who has some pretty transformative legislation, that criminal justice reform legislation, and he's been a big activist in taking down the statue movement. We have congressional candidate Rebecca Parson, who's out of Washington State, socialist, running a pretty incredible campaign. And then we do a segment on, naturally, COVID in Arizona, just because it's gotten so crazy and people keep asking. So I had to bring someone on to talk about it.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, head into the fun half. We should wrap up, I guess, the Booker McGrath thing. A real bummer about that. But we'll talk about it in the fun half right back after this.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous? You're a little bit upset? You're riled up?
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid...